Garrison Keillor on the Jefferson Exchange with today's edition of the Writer's Almanac. It's 8:41 on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening to us on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And here's your daily reminder. You can find us not just on the radio, but also online. The website for the program is jeffexchange.org. It features program topics and recordings and a look ahead to future editions of the Jefferson Exchange. It is part of the larger website, ijpr.org, which we revamped, about 5 months ago now, with lots of new features and news items and offerings in music and arts and culture and all sorts of great things to find at ijpr.org. If you haven't been there lately, please check it out and check out our corner at jeffexchange.org. You can also find us on Facebook at the Jefferson Exchange. There's also a JPR Facebook page separately. If you like either one of those pages, that information from that page ends up on your Facebook news feed on a daily basis. And yes, that's like in the Facebook sense. We actually push the button that says like. And you can also follow the Jefferson Exchange on Twitter, at Jeff Exchange. So a bunch of places to find us online, ijpr.org, jeffexchange.org, on Facebook and on Twitter. And you can also find, you can also take part in our conversations as they happen. Phone numbers here on the Exchange, 800-838-3760. That's anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Electronic cigarettes, or e-cigarettes, continue to make news headlines. Their use grew faster than a lot of people could follow. That includes legislators and potential regulators. For example, in Oregon, there is currently no legal restriction on sales of e-cigarettes to minors, but many retailers say they won't sell them anyway. The e-cigarettes don't have an open flame or tobacco like a regular cigarette, but they do ignite a fluid, and nicotine-laced vapor is inhaled into the lungs. And parts of them do get hot, as some people in Medford found out the hard way in recent weeks, and that's prompting a warning from the Medford Fire Department. Greg Kleinberg is the Medford Fire Marshal and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So for the folks just getting up to speed, what actually goes on in electronic cigarettes?
Okay, so there's a liquid nicotine, usually, is what it is, and there's a battery, a lithium-ion battery, and it supplies power to a heating element, and the liquid turns to vapor when it's heated up, and that's how people are able to inhale the vapors.
It's been pointed out to us that that process is referred to by the people who do it as vaping, not smoking.
Right.
Since you're inhaling the vapor. How hot does that element get? I've always been curious about that part of e-cigarettes. Do we know?
I'm not sure how hot it gets, but it's hot enough to vaporize the water. And so the problems we've been having is overheated batteries or overcharged batteries. We had two incidents. We had one in October where in a kid's room, there was actually one plugged in, and it was plugged into a laptop computer. It ended up igniting some fabric and a mattress, and the dad came in with a fire extinguisher and put it out, but it would have ended up a full structure fire had he not discovered it early. And then we had one last week where a lady left her house and basically left it plugged in, and the battery overheated and actually created a projectile that hit the ceiling and the wall, fell down on a pillow, started it, smoldering on fire, and she came home to a smoke-filled house.
Yikes. But that never got beyond the smoldering stage, so it didn't require intervention in terms of a fire extinguisher like the first case?
No. The second case, she came home and discovered it. She didn't call 911. I would recommend that you always call the fire department. Even if you think something is out, it still could be smoldering. It could flame up at any point. We come to ensure that, you know, it's fully extinguished. And anyway, she didn't call the fire department, and it was a throw pillow, basically. But if that continued to gain momentum and maybe started an upholstered chair or sofa on fire, then, or she didn't come home quickly enough, her house would have been, you know, ignited.
So in both cases, it sounds like the homeowners or the occupants were pretty lucky in the sense that they were there to catch things before they got out of control.
They were very fortunate. They caught it in the early stages.
In the case with the case in October with the fire extinguisher, you said that really had all the marks of it could have turned into a structure fire.
Yes, the mattress was on fire; it was flaming. One of the occupants yelled fire, and the father came in and hit it with a fire extinguisher. But it just takes a matter of seconds between when something is small enough to be able to fight it with a fire extinguisher and it's too big, it's not going to help at all. We had a fire the other day where a beanbag caught on fire, and it quickly got big enough to where the guy came in with a fire extinguisher, but he ended up throwing the fire extinguisher and just running because the fire spread so quickly.
So I guess that just in a general sense, if you do have a fire extinguisher in hand, what are the circumstances? I mean, you're always going to use it, or are there some circumstances where you're just going to say, forget it, this is too big for me?
So if the fire is small and it's contained and it's not rapidly growing, like in a wastebasket or something like that, or a pillow like what we talked about, then that's an appropriate time to go grab one. If the house is filled with smoke, or the fire is really rising up the wall, up to the ceiling level, at that point, the fire is too big to control with a fire extinguisher. You're much better just to get out of the house and call 911 when you get out.
Our guest on the Jefferson Exchange is Greg Kleinberg, the Medford Fire Marshal. We're talking about e-cigarettes starting a couple of small fires and some corresponding warnings then coming from the Medford Fire Department. You might have some stories or questions about this as well. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. With the issue with electronic cigarettes or e-cigarettes is they seem to get out there so fast and grow in sales so fast that caught a lot of people flat-footed, certainly at the regulatory end of things. Do they come with any warnings about fire hazards?
If you go down to the local shops, there's warnings. There's several warnings. We had an inspector go down there and look at that, but he looked at some of the boxes and he didn't see any warnings. Nor is there any Underwriter Laboratory markings on a lot of them. They just say made in China. And that's one of the pieces of advice I would give. There are some that are UL listed, and that means that they go through a testing process, and they're basically deemed acceptable in this U.S. market to use here. And there's a lot of them that are not, and they just come in here in the multitudes, basically, and there's no testing, no process for that in place right now.
All right, that was a question I was going to ask, because a lot of electrical appliances carry that UL code approval, the Underwriters Laboratory. It's a little circle with a U and an L in it. So, but some of the e-cigarettes you're saying do have that.
Some of them do have that, and the charging units will have that. Another issue is, a lot of these use a USB receptacle, so you may be able to plug in into different types of chargers and different laptops and things like that. And what I would caution is to really read the manufacturer's warnings, because not every charger is the same. Some put out more current and voltage, and these are specifically, there's like three different battery sizes on these cigarettes. And so if you're using a charger that is not meant for the cigarette, that could be an issue too.
Interesting. And I noticed that you said that it was the first case was actually plugged into a laptop. It had the USB thing for the charging part.
Yeah, it was plugged into a laptop. And honestly, some of the manufacturer's instructions say that that's okay. But all the instructions are different. I would really read over the item that you're getting. And if I looked at several of them, there's not a lot of safety information on them. But if you do an internet search of e-cigarette fires, you're going to find a lot of incidents happening throughout the country. And so that's what brought my attention to it. That's why we put the media release out.
And have you had many discussions with other fire agencies around the country about similar incidents?
No, I haven't. We had our second incident last week, and I did a quick internet search and discovered that, yeah, this is a problem nationwide. And so I chose to put this warning out to our community. But that's something I think we're going to be discussing in the future.
In the cases that you had a chance to do the research on, was it a similar set of circumstances where it was a charging situation where things just got really hot?
Yeah. In almost every case, it talks about an overloaded or overcharged battery or an overheated battery. And there has been some injuries related with these. If you look at the internet, you'll see there's a boy burned in a car with one of these when it overheated and actually pieces blew out of the cigarette
and
where
in,
the battery was.
In all these cases, these are lithium-ion batteries, is that right?
They're lithium-ion batteries. And this case last week, we have this picture of this pillow with pieces of battery on it. And we have pictures of burn marks on the wall and the ceiling where it hit. So this is not just a matter of it overheating and flaming up in its location. This is actually creating a projectile that, you know, could injure you and could land on combustible items.
It sounds like it exploded with quite a bit of force. Were there some dents in the walls or something in that second case?
No, there were no dents, but there were, you know, pretty big burn marks on the wall and the ceiling.
The larger discussion of charging devices leads me to ask about when you talked just a bit about the USB chargers. It seems there's so many things right now that you can plug into a USB port for charging, and then there's this other gadget that doesn't require the computer. You just plug it into the wall, and it's got a USB port on it. And I've often wondered, since we're plugging in so many different things with so many different power and voltage requirements, does that block have some way to gauge what the needs of the device are on the other end?
Well, I would probably stick with the original equipment. That's probably your best case, but I know there's third parties that make charging devices, and I'm sure a lot of those are safe. If they're UL listed, they're safe, and I'm sure there's design parameters on all of those to only put out so much. One of the issues that I read about with the e-cigarettes is sometimes they don't have a mechanism in place to stop the charging. A lot of devices will charge for a certain amount of time or until the battery is charged, and then it cuts off. And some of the e-cigarettes have that safety feature in place, but some of them don't.
All right, so generally you want something that's going to cut off the charge. I didn't even ask whether the two cases in Medford, were neither of those charging units up to UL snuff?
Well, at this point, we don't know. We contacted the Consumer Product Safety Commission. We're going to give them this latest item that we have at our department, and they're going to do some research on it. They're very interested in it. But we didn't see any markings on this latest one, and I'm not sure about the first one. All I have is some pictures of it. But it should be clearly marked if it's UL listed.
It's pretty easy to find. We have a message here from Susan in Ashland. She wanted to say that this almost happened to her in her home, and she feels that this information needs to be more common. Well, that's why Greg Kleinberg from the Medford Fire Department is here with us as fire marshal to talk about this. Greg, the issue of chargers and lithium-ion batteries in general, I know that part of the issue with Boeing getting that snazzy new plane off the ground was having problems with the lithium-ion batteries and what was going on with them overheating and in some cases causing fires. Is there a general warning about lithium-ion batteries for all sorts of products? I mean, if they're UL listed, are they generally okay?
They're generally okay. Occasionally, the Consumer Product Safety Commission will put out a warning or a recall. And there's been enough incidents that it warrants for them to do that. I assume that they're going to be looking at this real carefully in the future and try to regulate these more. Right now, I think the FDA is looking into regulating e-cigarettes, but I think the UL Underwriter Laboratories will also have a part in that because it's an electrical appliance.
Right, so you've really got two fronts to look at there. There's the FDA efforts to regulate e-cigarettes as a tobacco product, and at the same time, the electrical concerns that are of interest to people like yourself at fire agencies. I imagine that you're probably expecting to see more of these down the road. You're just sort of bracing for the next one?
We are, and, you know, it's something that we have fire investigators here, and we try to determine the origin and the cause of fires, and it's something that we'll keep our eyes open for whenever there's a fire, and if we have information about it, we will investigate that.
Any recommendations that are going up from the Medford Fire Department to legislators or anybody else about potential regulations? You mentioned contacting the Consumer Product Safety Commission, but anything in the way of state law that you think might be considered here?
Not at this point. There's a federal push, like I said, for the FDA to regulate these, and I think that they've been scrambling to keep up with this and to put legislation in place, and I think that probably is the best route because that's going to be nationwide.
And you you did mention, obviously, that in the first case with an electronic cigarette charger getting too hot and starting a fire, that a fire extinguisher pretty much saved the day. This is a good time for us to talk about fire extinguishers, and I think this is the time of year you want people to change their smoke alarm batteries anyway, because we got the time change coming up this weekend. When shopping for a fire extinguisher, what's the set of things that people should be considering?
Well, the best thing probably would be to get a multi-purpose fire extinguisher that'll put out different classes of fires. An ABC fire extinguisher would be good. Don't buy the smallest fire extinguisher that you can find. The bigger it is, the more agent that you're going to have. The really small ones will last a few seconds, and they'll be out. We recommend for businesses in the city of Medford a minimum size 2A10BC, which is a 5-pound fire extinguisher. It's the one with a hose on it. And so it's always good to have one handy. It's good to have it near an exit location so that you don't go try to find the fire extinguisher and get trapped, you know, in the house somewhere between the fire and the exit.
Oh, right. So don't have it so far in the house. You have to go back for it.
Exactly. Right. And always good to have one in the kitchen. About a third of our fires are kitchen fires. And so it's good to have one handy and ready.
All right. Good set of recommendations all around. Greg Kleinberg is the Medford Fire Marshal, talking to us a little more generally here about fire extinguishers, but before that, about dangers with e-cigarettes. Thanks for the warning on that, Greg. Appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for taking this.
All right. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Hour number two, we'll talk to a couple of authors about publishing. That's next on the Jefferson Exchange.